BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I'm John Pienaar. Thanks for clicking on the Pienaar's Politics podcast for another week. I'm not going to surprise you. It's about Brexit, but it is interesting stuff. And when I say interesting, I think that's a bit of an understatement. We're getting to a point, a very, very sharp point in this process where decisions, if not actually reached, it's becoming painful to avoid them. And that's happening right now. The Prime Minister, in maybe the most uncomfortable and painful position of all, is her cabinet taking charge. I'm not going to spoil the show before you've heard it. Have a listen. Morning, I'm John Pienaar. Welcome to Pienaar's Politics. Well, that was a big week, although I admit the memory of what actually happened is already getting a bit hazy, beyond the fact that Theresa May still looks like a leader with few, if any, true followers, and her Brexit plan like a well-meaning but slightly embarrassing guest at a Christmas party. In Europe, it's treated kindly, but as if it's out of place and been hanging around too long. At Westminster, most ministers and MPs just wish it would go away. So the real action's about what happens next. Will cabinet ministers take back control, as they used to say, and then let Parliament decide what becomes of Brexit? Or will the Brexiteers at the table steer us closer to leaving with no deal? The outcome they hate seeing described as catastrophically crashing out. They'd rather say it's about the country taking off. Cabinet Minister Damian Hines joins us live. He's loyal to Theresa May and her plan, but then aren't they all? Also on the show, Labour's Shadow Health Secretary John Ashworth. He's worried about people stuck on NHS waiting lists and would also ask him about Brexit. And Sam Giemer, he quit the government over Brexit. Yeah, I know, we just can't let it lie, can we? So, and with us through the coming hour, Sam Coates is back with us, Deputy Political Editor at The Times. Hey, Sam.
Good morning.
And with us for the first time, Sienna Rogers, who's editor of the Labour Grassroots website, Labour List. Took the job in February. Hello, Sienna.
Hello, good morning.
Good to see you. Sam, your thoughts? The cabinet is deadlocked, of course. Parliament is deadlocked. Mrs. May is a one-woman logjam from one point of view. But in the end, something has got to give.
Yes. I mean, here we are, 8 days, 13 hours, 53 minutes and 14 seconds away from Christmas.
You've got an app open.
I do, because it's important to me and I suspect many members of the cabinet. And for this year, Christmas has some political significance because here we are heading into the final parliamentary week before Christmas, that Commons breaks up on Thursday, still stuck in with the same essential big picture parameters. Theresa May's trying to get her deal through. She's bought herself a bit more time. Parliament has no clear way forward. Europe are looking on askance and increasingly worried. And the problem is that what Christmas does now is inject a big break in proceedings, even though March the 29th remained the day that we crash out of the European Union. And so we've got this situation where everybody, but everybody, is looking for a plan B. Theresa May went to Brussels and was told she couldn't have anything at the moment. And I think after that, cabinet ministers that I've been talking to, advisors and all that, see that she is basically stuck. Her plan, as it stands, isn't going to get through. So they're looking at a range of options. In yesterday's Times, I reported on three different camps in the cabinet, as it were. You have the Gang of Five. So that's Philip Hammond, David Gawke, David Lidington, Greg Clark,
Amber Rudd,
who are saying, look, we've just got to get Parliament to select some options. And it's a big and genuine if they can't select any, then maybe we should go for a second referendum. Then you've got people on the other side of the ideological spectrum, plus Jeremy Hunt, going, maybe we should just make it clear and be prepared and actually possibly do no deal with however many mitigations we can. And then you've got some people stuck in the middle, like, I think, Sajid Javid, and people like Michael Gove, who just think a deal, any deal, however soft or not at this stage, is the way through.
And the leadership game in the background, that's it's tugging at strings, it's having its influence, isn't it? You've got Penny Mordaunt certainly pushing for a no deal. Jeremy Hunt's been all over the airways this weekend. He was a Remainer not long ago. And then, you know, more recently, he described a no deal Brexit as a messy divorce, which would be a mistake for generations. Now he's a committed leaver and he thinks no deal would be a temporary disruption and ultimately fine. Funny that.
Jeremy Hunt, of course, was the first person immediately after the referendum in 2016 to come out for a referendum. He zigzags about. He wants to be leader. He said publicly he wants to be leader. But to do that,
crack at the top job, he said.
You need an 80,000, you need the 80,000 strong Tory membership, which leans quite Brexity, to like you. So this latest roll of the dice, which it can be encapsulated as, I don't think no deal is that bad, yeah. He hopes will bring over some votes. Will it? He's the second most popular after Michael Gove in the country, and I think that weighs him down quite a lot.
Sienna, on the Labour side, Jeremy Corbyn, behind him, decades of deep Euroscepticism for all sorts of reasons, many of them ideological, about the nature of the EU, which he's seen over years as being a sort of a capitalist's cabal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is he going to shift, do you think, to being more pro-European, maybe more pro-referendum?
I mean, this is such an interesting situation because we have this situation at the moment where both main party leaders could be about to lead us into a second referendum when neither of them want that. And obviously both of them are under enormous pressure internally from their parties and from their top advisers. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn absolutely, you know, he doesn't want another referendum because of his lifelong Euroscepticism. But also, I mean, he's still looking, like Theresa May, he's still looking at Plan A, which is general election. And his you know...
And he's worried about, you know, Leave voting.
Absolutely.
Labour voters.
Yeah, just like Caroline Flint. So it doesn't run across factional lines, which is also interesting because Caroline Flint, obviously, she has been outspoken about, you know, she's worried about her constituents, she's worried about undermining democratic faith through another referendum. And she, basically, she's agreeing with Corbyn on that. And, you know, she's traditionally a progress MP, a Blairite even. Mm. And at the same time, we have Blair, obviously, yeah. You know, on the airwaves.
Tony Blair. we're going to come back to that. Let's talk to Damien Hines now. He's on the line, Education Secretary in the Cabinet. Morning to you, Damien.
Morning, John.
So, look, Brexit is stuck. I mean, that's, you know, it couldn't be less controversial. One of your Cabinet colleagues was saying that this weekend. It barely bears discussion. But do you think, Damien, it just makes common sense to consult the House of Commons as a whole and what the Brexit deal might come out to be if Mrs May's deal won't fly? I take it as read you want Theresa May's deal to fly, and we'll come back to that. But the idea of consulting Parliament, that's just common sense, isn't it?
Well, consulting Parliament is something that, you know, happens every day. That's what politics is. And, you know, we've had days of debate. I mean, the most recent debate specifically on the, you know, on the deal, but actually in the preceding 2 years, lots and lots of debate in Parliament. And what's become abundantly clear is that there are, you know, there's about half a dozen different kind of first choice outcomes that different people have.
Yeah, but they can't
Although
all get
they are
through
supported
in the end,
very
Damien.
Strongly by,
sure.
by
but
a minority.
But in the end,
no,
Damien,
exactly.
But this, to be clear, only one
exactly
plan can get through.
Yeah.
And to find out what
and
that might
exactly
be. Yeah, let's just, so just your thoughts on this as a matter of no doubt eminent common sense. Only one plan can get through. So it makes sense to find out what that might be. It makes sense to canvass opinion in the Commons, on the floor and behind the scenes, just to see what might win through if Theresa May's plan can't.
Well, I mean, I think the abundantly clear point is that none of the half dozen or so first choice options that different people have a majority in Parliament. Mm. They have some people who are really, really strongly in favour of them, but a majority against. And that's why you end up having to have, you know, everybody has to think about what's a position that can bring people together. That can
well, it's not Theresa May's plan, is it? That's the least supported option.
Well, actually, whichever of the half a dozen starting points you start from, and you start to think, well, how would we adjust this to make it acceptable and attractive to more people? Actually, you do end up with something really close to the Prime Minister's deal, because it does balance out all these, you know, different objectives, some of which have some conflict between them. But it absolutely delivers on the referendum. Yeah. It ends free movement and gets us out of the common agricultural policy and all that.
And it might be doing reasonably well if only you could get the kind of concessions out of Brussels, which are simply beyond impossible. And no one in Brussels has even pretended, privately or publicly, at any time that you can get the kind of reassurances that you want. They will tell you, won't they, no, Damien? As much as you like, they'll tell you that this plan for an arrangement where Britain is bound by EU rules, it would be temporary. They'll say that. They will say it and set it to music. And they will bind it in leather and wrap it in gold leaf. And you could even have some sort of legal status to it. But that just doesn't hack it at Westminster, and we all know that.
Well, look, you are quite right that it's this thing about the backstop, which a lot of people have, yeah, understandably, have real serious concerns about. And so it is very important to address those and to try and to seek reassurances from the other countries. And what we saw in Brussels this week was a start in that process, not the end of the road, but a start. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have to think about not only this aspect of the backstop, which ultimately is something that we all hope is something that isn't going to actually happen. We hope it isn't going to happen. The other countries in the EU don't want it to happen either. So we also need to focus on what the actual deal is, what the actual future is, and this sort of balanced approach, which actually I think can appeal both to people who voted Leave and to people who voted Remain. It's a good deal. It is in many ways the best of both worlds.
Sure, and you wish, and you and really want it to, if, and you really want it, this, Damien, to come through. But you know, we know the odds against all of that. Ministers, your fellow senior ministers are meeting this week. Are you going to be suggesting, Damien, the idea of putting ideas to the House of Commons, maybe canvassing votes on the floor or by whatever means? Are you going to be putting the idea of, let's find out where we are with the amount of support for particular ideas in the Commons? Are you going to be doing that?
So I think there is a value in sort of flushing out, you know, what these various different options are that some, as I say, some people support very strongly but don't have a majority in favour of them.
Yeah, by votes, actually, Damien, just, by votes, flushing them out in that way, yeah?
Well, there's different ways you could do it. I mean, I actually think on a straightforward count that you could make now of who has spoken in favour of what and who has spoken against what, it is clear that there is not a majority for any of these.
Flushing out,
options,
as you say, that involves then, taking the temperature now, and you say that's, it just makes sense to do that. You say it's just politics.
Well, everything we do in politics is about, you know, they talk about the art of the possible.
Yeah.
It's about taking people from different points of view and saying, how can we find a way through? And actually, you know, this, as I say, whichever your starting point is, when you accept that it doesn't have a majority,
yeah,
so what can we all come together around?
Sure.
You will end up with something very like the essence of the PM's deal. And you know, if that had been offered to people before the referendum, whichever side they were eventually going to vote on, Leave or Remain, if you'd offered it then, actually, I think an awful lot of people would have bitten your hand off.
Yeah. I mean, look, as you say, we know that you support Mrs May's deal, and we know you genuinely believe if it could go through, it would tick all sorts of boxes. We also know that you know, as everyone knows, the obstacles to that. But you have been pretty straightforward in saying it makes sense to flush out, as you say, different ideas, to consult in different ways. It's just politics. There's got to be some solution. Because, Damien, you are no fan, are you, of leaving the EU with no deal? You're no fan of that at all.
That is correct. I am no fan of that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just from your own point of view, sum it up for us. What is it you most fear, you most are most concerned about when it comes to the idea of leaving with no deal?
Well, look, over decades, we've built up a close relationship with the other countries of Europe. A lot of our trade depends on it. You know, the just-in-time supply chains for the car industry, which has had great success in recent years, but also all sorts of other things around cooperation on different matters, on security, on research, on science, you know, you name it.
Mm.
So it makes sense for our country to have a good future relationship with the countries of the European Union, and specifically on trade, which a lot of this hinges on.
Yes.
You know, people talk about, oh, what's wrong with WTO rules?
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with WTO rules.
Yeah.
But, you know, all major nations of the world expend vast amounts of time and effort trying to get beyond WTO rules.
Wouldn't we be the only, major economy in the world
a deal
with no bilateral deal beyond WTO rules? That's just a matter of fact.
You know,
let me ask you this, though, because time is pressing a bit, Damien, if you'll bear.
Yeah.
We're on the matter of
sure,
of no deal. There's a view out there at Westminster among your colleagues, not just that it's a bad idea, but that it couldn't happen, that Parliament wouldn't wear it. Just have a listen to that, and let's have a listen to this. You may have heard it already. This is Tobias Elwood, who's a defence minister and a colleague of yours. I spoke to him just in the week, and this was his verdict on the idea of no deal.
A no deal is simply not an option. The MOD planning that we're doing civil contingency-wise shows that bilateral arrangements aren't in place. Economically and from a security perspective, it's simply not possible to do this.
Politically, Parliament?
Parliament as well has now proved, because of the amendments that have gone through, that we can't actually move into this without Parliament's approval itself. And the voice across Parliament is clear. No deal is not an option.
I'm guessing, Damien, you agree with that.
Well, Tobias is dead right that, like the other five or six things, no deal does not have a majority in favour of it in Parliament.
He said he just couldn't get through for that reason.
But there's still a risk. But there's still a risk of no deal because, you know, without wanting to sound too tautologist about it, no deal is just the absence of a deal. So if you get to the 29th of March and there's nothing else agreed, nothing else put in place, then that is no deal.
And yet we hear people like your cabinet colleague Liam Fox say that a no deal outcome is possible, and he sees nothing to fear in all of that. And he argued on the BBC this week, I'm sure you've heard it since then, that the cabinet may just say, well, we're not even going to go back to the Commons with Mrs May's deal unless we get the right kind of concessions, and drawing a line in the sand there. So heading towards no deal. This is Liam Fox, your cabinet colleague. You'd say, presumably, well, you just don't agree with that. You just don't accept that.
No, Liam's absolutely focused on good trade deals, and that means going beyond WTO rules. And you know, that's attractive whether we're talking about the deals we're going to be making with the United States and elsewhere,
he suggested the cabinet, of which you are a member, may simply not allow Theresa May's deal to go back to the floor of the House of Commons. It was a fairly sort of muscular thing for a cabinet minister to say, and you would disagree with it.
Well, look, you were asking about no deal. We need to be really clear that, look, if there was no deal, we would deal with that situation. We would mitigate the effects and we'd, you know, put in place arrangements to smooth the transition as much as possible. Yeah. But it does remain a very, very unattractive option compared
some of your
to
colleagues,
having a deal.
Some of your colleagues,
and that's what we're all focused on.
Sure. Some of your colleagues in the cabinet, Damien, would quit. They would resign the cabinet rather than countenance no deal. Are you one of them?
Look, no deal is something that we all in the cabinet are focused on avoiding by having a good deal, and that's where people's energies have to be directed and are directed, rather than talking about scenarios of what happens if, when, and but. Mm. We need to get on and do this deal. You know, we need something that brings people together, whichever way they voted in the referendum, that we can all get behind as a nation, and we can get on and you know, be devoting parliamentary time to other things on the domestic agenda.
I'll tell you
so
what, Damien, I didn't think you were going to answer that question, to be honest, but I thought I'd have a pop. Sam's here.
Sam Coates from The Times. Hello, Damien. Listen,
Sam, hi.
Your logic is impeccable. You say there is no majority for everything. And then you suggest that there is hope. There is hope that once people realise that, people might come around behind Theresa May's deal. But that is only a hope. And so I'm going to present you with a binary choice. In the event that, as you say, would be true at the moment, all options are exhausted and there are just two options on the table, no deal or second referendum, which way do you lean?
Well, Sam, there isn't a binary choice. You know, what we need to do, and as long as we talk about binary choice in this, well, it was, you said if there was a binary choice, there isn't a binary choice. And as long as we carry on talking about binary choices or just saying what things are you against, then we won't make progress in this, because we do need a balanced approach, which everybody can get behind, which does honour the outcome of the referendum, but does it in a way which protects our trade and our economic relationship with Europe. And that's why, you know, the essence of the PM's deal, something very close to that, is what we should end up with. Mm. But we won't end up with, as you know, with anybody's first choice option necessarily.
Mm. Okay, last one, Damien. There's an awful lot of jockeying for position going on in the cabinet. You know that, and we know that. It's influencing the debate in all sorts of different ways. Are you after the premiership? And if not, Damien, why not? What's wrong with you?
No. And, you know, what everybody is focused on is the task we have in hand. This is a really big task we've got. You know, it is as you know, John, this is an enormously divisive issue in our country and in political parties, including mine. We have to get through this. We have to get over it. And it's not going to be easy. But that's what everybody's energies and focus has to be on to make sure that we can get a deal through Parliament and be able to move on to all the other things that we need to be thinking about.
Damien, I'm going to move on. Thanks for joining us this morning. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, John.
That's Damien Hines, the Education Secretary. And listening to all of that with us was Jonathan Ashworth, who's a member of Labour's Shadow Cabinet. He's the Shadow Health Secretary. He's in Leicester. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning.
What did you make of all that?
I just thought that was an extraordinary interview. It utterly revealed the chaos in the government with ministers at sixes and sevens. You've got Jeremy Hunt, the Foreign Secretary, for goodness sake, saying we would flourish with no deal. Now, some say he's got an eye on the Tory leadership, who knows? We've got Damien there saying he's no fan of no deal. Apparently David Gawk is letting it be known he would resign if there was no deal. And all the time, you've got Theresa May limping along, completely embarrassed, not able to get anything out of this summit in the last few days. And everybody recognising that her deal is unlikely to get through Parliament. I would say bring that deal to Parliament next week. Let's have a vote on it. And if we can't have a vote on it next week, let's get a vote on ensuring there is no deal, because no deal really would be catastrophic.
Tell you what you could do, though, next week. You could bring forward a vote of no confidence in the government. Then we'd have that. You've got that in your control. So you'll do that, will you?
Well, we're going to judge the right moment to bring forward a vote of no confidence, because, look, we've got no confidence in this government. As it happens, I don't think many Tory ministers have confidence in this government. We're supposed to be having the NHS planned next week. That apparently has been shelved. Mm. So that's an embarrassing failure of leadership from Matt Hancock. The plans on the social care green paper have been shelved as well. So it's not just us who have no confidence. Their own ministers don't seem to have any confidence in them. But we've not made a decision. We will continue to look at this and we'll bring it forward at the right moment. Yeah. Whether that's next week or a future date.
Yeah, I suppose one can recognise the time to bring it forward is when it's going to cause the most damage, and maybe that may well not be now, next week. Maybe that's in the new year. We'll have to see how you call that one. On this, though, Jonathan, in your own judgment, was Tony Blair, you used to be a big fan of Tony Blair, was he right to say a new referendum was the most likely outcome now?
I think Parliament has to try and get a deal that is in the interests of the British people. We believe that deal is along the lines of a permanent membership of a customs union, a single market relationship, and protections for jobs, for employment rights, for environmental standards. But we've also said, and our party conference agreed this, and we're a democratic party, that if it's obvious that no deal is possible, if it's obvious that a general election is possible, then in that event, all options should be on the table, including a public vote.
Yeah, I mean, that's an accurate recitation of the motion that was passed at the Labour Party conference. Do you think Tony Blair was right, though, to say it's now the most likely outcome, in your judgment?
Tony Blair is allowed to make his contribution to the debate. He's a former leader of the Labour Party, former Prime Minister. Well, I think there are a number of stages that we still have to navigate in Parliament. It may well be that the end destination has to be another vote, because Parliament cannot agree. That is the terms of our motion. But I think it's incumbent upon us as an opposition, as a shadow cabinet, to try our best to get a deal which safeguards jobs, prosperities, workers' rights, environmental standards. That has to be our priority. Mm. And it begins with trying to get the government to close off no deal. Because no deal would be catastrophic.
Some people, Jonathan, are beyond sceptical that you could go to Brussels and, by smiling at those around the very same table, just get the bigger concessions than Theresa May has banged her head against the wall and failed to get.
Well, I think we'd do more than smile. I think we would come forward with a serious, serious plan, and we would negotiate seriously. I mean, She hasn't been negotiating seriously. She's been negotiating with her own party for 2 years.
She's been asking for things Brussels has been refusing to give. And you're suggesting you could just go there with an open bag and walk away with it.
Theresa May has completely mishandled this thing from the start 2 years ago, the way in which she set down ludicrous red lines back in her party conference speech, by being so partisan in her approach, by being utterly antagonistic to the European Union. So it's no surprise that at the end of the road, she's completely failed in her negotiations, because the Tory party is all over the shop on this.
OK, look, Sienna Rogers is here. I'm sure you know her well.
Hi, John. It's Sienna here.
Hiya.
Hi. So Jeremy Corbyn's first preference is to renegotiate, right? He says that we can get a better deal. Jeremy's better Brexit. But 68% of voters say they don't believe that a deal can actually be reached. And Labour keeps saying that their deal would need a backstop. But, I mean, the experts say that that's not true, because it's a strong relationship with the single market, not membership of a single market with the EU. What do you think?
Well, of course, we're arguing for a permanent customs union membership, which deals with the hard border issue in the island of Ireland, which then in turn deals with the backstop point. But look, there was a number of staging posts now in Parliament. we believe next week in Parliament shouldn't be a sort of week of, you know, sort of general debates and so on, which the government wants it to be, important though some of those general debates are. We should either have a vote on Theresa May's deal, or we should use that next week to make clear that we want to block no deal.
But the Commons...
And we're going to be looking at various options this week to see what we can do as an official opposition to force that. So if any Tory whips are listening, they ought not to stand there. Perhaps they should stand them down. But
the Commons can make it clear that they don't want no deal. But the point is the Dominic Grieve Amendment and those kind of votes... You know, they don't really make a concrete difference. The point is that no deal is the default.
Well, that's why we want to bring forward proposals to Parliament, or try and get Parliament to agree to rule out no deal. Because, look, right, you know, you've got the Prime Minister essentially running down the clock, playing Russian roulette with no deal. No deal would be a catastrophe for the NHS. Do you know we import something like 37 million packs of medicine every month from the EU? Mm-hmm. If we do not have a deal, if we have friction in the import of those medicines, it affects people. It affects people's lives in this country. It is a catastrophe. And for Theresa May and for Matt Hancock to be sort of playing, as I say, roulette with this, is absolutely disgraceful. The government should work with us to rule out no deal.
Sam Coates.
Jonathan. Theresa May has pretty much the best deal available in terms of where we might end up with the single market, so long as you want to end free movement of migration. The big point of difference is membership between Labour and Tory is membership of the customs union. Say we took Theresa May's deal, bolted on full membership of the customs union, I would argue the difference between your two sides is square root of a 10-minute rule debate, diddly squat. Why couldn't you vote for that? Or could you?
Well, that's a hypothetical, and you'll know, Sam, that lots of politicians refuse to engage in hypotheticals.
Your entire interview has been discussing hypotheticals. Why couldn't you vote for Theresa May's deal plus a customs union?
But that is not on the table, is it?
Well, if Parliament forced it to be on the table, how would you react then? If you really do want to rule out no deal.
Well, if Parliament forced that on the table, we would be in a different scenario. But we would also be looking for safeguards on workers' rights, on environmental protections. We'd also be looking for clarity on a single market trading relationship. So it's not just as simple as a permanent customs union membership, as the premise of your question suggested. The other parts of a potential deal solution to this that we are looking for as a Labour Party.
Yeah, and Brussels is saying that when it comes to workers' rights, they have no intention at all, nor do they envisage any intention of threatening the status quo where we are with protection for workers' rights. And the same is said for the environment. You do, though, have a problem on the Labour side, and Jeremy Corbyn very much in particular on this, is when it comes to the rules of the single market as they bear on the power of a state to intervene in industry and use state aid. Because that is a problem for you, that for your party, for Jeremy Corbyn, isn't it? You want a free pass on that, and you're not going to get it.
No, I mean, actually, you can do a lot of interventionist investment supporting industry.
Yeah. But have you explained that to Jeremy Corbyn?
Within the European Union, I mean, the last Labour government did much of that. I mean, when we had the financial crash of the 2007-08 period, we intervened in the car industry and essentially saved the car industry with some of the measures we took then.
Why doesn't Jeremy buy that argument? I know that a lot of people around him, not his immediate circle, but in the shadow cabinet, have for a long time been explaining that the issue of state aid should not be a problem, but he considers that it is.
Well, there are obviously state aid rules in the European Union, but it doesn't prevent you supporting industry and manufacturing. But actually, the issue around the single market, which we have said that we want a single market relationship, is because we have to recognise that in the referendum, free movement of labour was rejected and we want a managed migration policy. I'm actually in favour of a sensible migration policy because I know that ending and not having a sensible policy will be devastating for the NHS when so many people from the EU work in our National Health Service continue to recruit.
This could be a Conservative free pro-European speaking.
Sorry?
This could be a pro-European. Conservative speaking, you've got a lot of common ground with a lot of Tory MPs on this.
Which Tory MP, sorry?
Well, there were a number of... When we talk about the former Remainers, which is a kind of an outdated concept, but those who are looking for a compromise with Europe, they talk about not necessarily full freedom of movement, they talk about the sort of freedom of movement that's implemented by an EEA member like Norway, where you have some control, though not total, a totally open door.
Yeah, but the problem with the Norway option is it doesn't safeguard our position in Ireland, I don't believe.
Yeah, but you're talking about...
It doesn't avoid us having a hard border. No, I am talking about freedom of movement in that respect, but it's a multifaceted issue, this, isn't it? And there's lots of different things that we have to resolve.
OK, last one from Sam.
Jonathan, one thing we haven't talked about, second referendum. Are there any circumstances that you can see yourself being enthusiastic for a second referendum, or do you think that the party needs to do everything it can to avoid that outcome?
Well, we have spoken about a second referendum, and if we cannot get a deal in Parliament, and if we cannot get a general election, then a second referendum has to be on the table. And I personally think in those circumstances, given that there is deadlock in Parliament, Parliament can't agree, it is not unreasonable to ask the British people again in a public vote. And that is why we passed the resolution at our party conference.
Yeah.
But we have to try.
Do you think
our
it's inevitable, as John McDonnell, the Shadow Chancellor, suggested? If you can't get a general election, is it then inevitable that you go to a referendum?
Well, if we can't get a general election, then clearly that becomes an attractive option which has to be considered seriously.
You're a shadow cabinet member.
That is what our conference resolution suggests.
Would you be pushing in that direction? Last word on this? Yes.
Well, as a member of the shadow cabinet, I always want to see our conference resolutions implemented.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, Jonathan. Look forward to talking to you again. So let's talk a bit more. Let's talk to the Democratic Unionist Party in the form of Emma Little-Pengelly, the MP, one of that group at Westminster, the kingmakers, queen makers, queen breakers, conceivably. We shall see. Morning, Emma.
Good morning.
Let me ask you this straight away. We were mentioned just a moment ago, I don't know if you heard it, but the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, is weighing up when to call a vote of confidence in the government. Now, your members are obviously important in this hung parliament. I hear he's been sounding you guys out for the terms in which you might join him in voting against the government. Don't know how that's going, but you're not going to join him in voting against the government in a vote of confidence, are you?
Well, ultimately, we want this government to work. We want the government to succeed. We want Theresa May to get a deal that we can support. So therefore, our approach to this has been to try at this stage to give the Prime Minister the opportunity. She's been back to Brussels, but to make the case to say that this backstop, in particular within the agreement, is unsellable, not just to the DUP, but it's clearly unsellable across many people, across the parties in the House of Commons. Mm. And although, you know, there's a lot of talk about, particularly from the European Union side, that there is this agreement, they are not willing to reopen that. But the reality is they have had an agreement with the Prime Minister. But in order to have an agreement with the United Kingdom, that agreement needs to pass the House of Commons.
Yes.
And in the form that it's in at the moment, we see no prospect of that happening. So what we want to do is rather than get distracted by discussions around no confidence motions, we want to give the Prime Minister that space to try to address these issues.
So while that Theresa May plan is stuck where it is, in deep mud, in deep limbo, you will not exactly back them. You'll put them through all sorts of torment, but you're not going to vote against them in a vote of confidence, which questions their very survival as a government. You just won't do that.
Well, ultimately, as I've indicated, we want a deal, but we want that deal to be a good deal. And I think the best way to try to achieve that at this stage is to give the Prime Minister that space.
Mm. Of course, if that deal in some form did go through, then you wouldn't you, turn against the government? You might even vote against them to the point that, well, raises the question, are they going to be kicked out of office? Then you would turn, wouldn't you?
Well, the difficulty with all of this is that we consider this to be a bad deal. We consider it, in fact, to be a devastating deal.
Mm. And a deal breaker between the government and your party.
And we will not be supporting this agreement if it stays the way it is. That's very fundamental. We've made that clear. And, you know, but what we've said is that then we look at all of the options beyond that. We don't want at this stage to get involved in distractions again about, you know, the different variables that, you know, what will happen after that. We want the Prime Minister to hear our message, and our message to be very, very clear to her is that this is unacceptable. We will not support this deal if the backstop is as it is. And I think it is important probably for your listeners, you know, to explain a little bit about why we are so concerned about the backstop, because we believe that that will sever Northern Ireland from the rest of the United Kingdom in economic terms.
Yeah.
Breaks up the UK's single market. And some people may say, why is that important? But, you know, even in the context of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement, and that's been mentioned a lot, you know, that agreement recognised the reality, which is the majority of people in Northern Ireland wanted to remain within the United Kingdom.
Yes.
And of course, we want to have a good relationship with the Republic of Ireland. We recognise, of course, again, that people trade across the border. We've said we want to avoid a hard border, but to avoid a hard border by putting barriers between Great Britain and Northern Ireland within the United Kingdom, in our view, is a significant breach of the spirit of
there's
the
literally
Friday
no
agreement.
Wish on, as you know, of course, Emma, there's no wish on anyone's part to put up a physical border on the island of Ireland to have stops and checks. Not Brussels, not Dublin, not London, not you.
Absolutely. And I think what we need to remember in all of this is that this didn't start with whether or not people supported a backstop or were against a backstop. Where this started was with agreement with everybody to avoid a hard border. The backstop is a process in that, but we all agree we want to avoid a hard border. Mm. We believe that there are other ways of doing that. Because it's just simply not acceptable. And I think it's very unfair of this idea that to avoid any checks, to even to avoid an additional camera on the border, what unionists in Northern Ireland are being asked to accept, what unionists right across the United Kingdom are being asked to accept, are 68 pages of new checks between Great Britain and Northern Ireland within the United Kingdom. That will inevitably mean that Northern Ireland will become severed from the rest of the UK in economic terms. And actually, over time, that is a very fundamental impact for us, because there will be increased regulatory divergence. We would not be able to participate in trade deals and goods coming in under the treaty.
Sam Coates.
Is very fundamental.
Good morning, Emma. Brexit is stuck, but Northern Ireland's governance is also in the middle of a stalemate. And there is just the most extraordinary story in this morning's papers. Northern Ireland currently is run by civil servants with no real political oversight. There are lots of people, including, I believe, the DUP, that would prefer, if there's not going to be Stormont up and running, that Westminster takes back control and that the Westminster government and that Westminster provides at least a little bit of democratic accountability over what's going on and how Northern Ireland is run. The story in the Mail on Sunday this morning is that Boris Johnson is promising just that. Theresa May does not want to bring back what some people call direct rule that you would want to see, but that Boris Johnson does. Have you heard that?
I haven't had the opportunity to look at that story, so I can't comment, I suppose, in too much in detail about that.
But would you want that kind of outcome?
Well, we have said publicly, we've said on the floor of the House of Commons on numerous occasions, I myself have said this, that we need decision-making and democratic accountability in Northern Ireland. It's deeply disappointing that we don't have a Northern Ireland Assembly there. And of course, we must continue to work to try to make that happen. But in the absence of that, it is absolutely unacceptable that we've got senior civil servants who are effectively making decisions. The government brought forward a piece of legislation to empower civil servants to make more decisions than what they could have done before. But, you know, there is a significant issue here about democratic deficit and democratic accountability for those decisions.
Isn't your husband one of those civil servants? Doesn't he run the health department?
He is indeed. He's the permanent secretary of the health department. And so,
is it unacceptable that he makes those decisions?
Well, I see it firsthand, the huge pressure that puts on to senior civil servants. I don't believe senior civil servants should be put in that position, because ultimately, they're trying to make decisions in difficult budget environments. Some of those decisions do require discussion and explanation in terms of the public. These are decisions that rightly should be going through scrutiny committees, debated on the floor of the Assembly. And yet you've got senior civil servants trying to deal with life and death issues, very tricky situations, without that minister or democratic accountability there. That is unacceptable. But we've said that, you know, we haven't hidden that. As I've said on the floor of the House of Commons on numerous times, we've urged the government to step in. We don't desire direct rule. Of course, we don't. We prefer. We're a party of devolution. But in the absence of being able to get those institutions up and going in Northern Ireland, we believe there should be ministerial decision-making from Westminster.
OK, Sienna Rogers.
Hi, Emma. Sienna here. Just quickly, have you spoken to anyone in the Labour Party about a vote of no confidence? Just to return to that.
Well, again, what we've said is that we're not going to be distracted by those types of conversations. I'm sure you can understand that if we started into the, you know, talking about those types of processes, speculating, entering into discussions, that then would become the dominant story around all of this. We've said repeatedly, we are not going to enter into to those types of discussions through the airwaves around what should have happened.
Sienna's not looking for speculation then, a factual answer. I mean,
What I can say is what we're focusing on at the minute is getting a clear message to the Prime Minister to go back to Brussels, try to get something changed, and we are leaving that space to enable her to do that.
But Corbyn says he can renegotiate a deal from a stronger position if he won a general election. He could renegotiate a deal without a backstop. So why not support him? Why not help him do that?
He may well believe that. He may well have said that.
So you don't believe
that? But what we are saying at this stage is that our strategy is to let the Prime Minister have the space that is required to give her the opportunity to address the problems. Now, I have to say we were deeply, deeply disappointed that the Prime Minister signed up to the withdrawal agreement in the first place. I don't believe we could have made it clearer in the run-up to that, that we, you know, are simpler because we only had one red line on this. We were deeply disappointed. But we do believe that the Prime Minister should be given the opportunity now to try to address that.
Okay.
We will take a look at what comes back and we will make decisions from there.
Right. Emma Little-Pengelly from the DUP. Lovely to talk to you. Okay, last up at the crease, it's Sam Gyimah, who was a minister in the government until he quit over Theresa May's Brexit deal. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in. Just wind back a moment to Damien Hines, the cabinet minister, who you heard a moment ago on this programme, saying it was a good idea to start canvassing opinion around other parties, maybe in Parliament, to try and find what might be supported, to test the temperature. Flushing out opinion is how he described it. You heard that. What do you think?
Yeah. I think the most pressing need for the House of Commons now is to have a resolution on the Prime Minister's deal. We now know that the EU is not going to renegotiate on the backstop, and the government is having to trigger very costly contingency plans, and so are businesses. Without a resolution on the Prime Minister's plan, it is very difficult for anyone to move forward. Now, to try and flush out other opinions before we've had a vote on the Prime Minister's plan sounds to me like a distraction.
I'm not sure that's really the discussion. It's about what happens when that plan goes down.
Oh, okay. If it's completely different when that plan goes down, but
You've heard what, Sam? Sorry.
I've heard a number of cabinet ministers talk about this privately, and it's always struck me as it's part of a time-wasting strategy to leave the Prime Minister's deal as the last deal standing. Because if you flush it out, then there's no majority for anything, in which case you might as well go for the Prime Minister.
Well, that's clearly not the agenda of people like Amber Rudd or Damien Hines, for that matter, or Phil Hammond. That's just not what they want.
After the Prime Minister's deal, if that is voted down, which it almost certainly looks like, then you can go through that process. But I think we will go through that process anyway, because there will be amendments that will be tabled by different MPs who have different ideas of the way forward. If the government is going to say, let's have an indicative voting process, then the government would have to allow a free vote. And the government would therefore have to allow a free vote, possibly on the PM's deal as well.
You can't consult people and then tell them how to vote.
Exactly. So it sounds to me like it's a great idea, but practically delivering it through the House of Commons. You know, will Labour whip its votes? Would the government give a free vote? All of these things would have to be
You'd have to have a free vote, Sam.
Good morning, Sam. The difficulty for everybody as we try to work out a way forward is that whatever path we take, there's got to be agreement between Parliament and the government. In other words, the person sitting in number 10, sleeping in number 10 every night. And that strikes me as one of the biggest difficulties. So the argument I've heard from some of those cabinet ministers who haven't ruled out a second referendum goes like this. We need Theresa May, who currently hates the idea of a second referendum because it calls into question her legacy as the Prime Minister that delivered Brexit. She has to be taken on this journey and she must be made to see that her deal doesn't work, that her deal modified doesn't work, that Norway doesn't work, and that no other options can get through the House of Commons. And it is only at that point that you're going to get any progress towards a second referendum. In a sense, the whole idea, as far as I understand it, for indicative votes, votes on every plan going, is to show Theresa May. It's a lobbying campaign designed at one woman to change her mind because she is stubborn, but she is stuck, but she is not moving yet.
That legacy point, Sam, is interesting, actually. When you look at the way the Prime Minister reacted to Tony Blair's suggestion about a referendum, calling it an insult to the office that he held, there was This was not just theatrical anger, was it? There was anger there. She takes it, it seems, really personally.
Absolutely. You know, she is not probably going to end up being one of those prime ministers who was in office for that long. I think she's currently the third or fourth shortest tenure in that position. She wants to eke out a bit more time. She certainly doesn't want to move out before Christmas. But the thing is that she needs to work out a way of getting through rather than being thrown out. And it is fascinating to see these reports. Joe Johnson suggested them in the Times yesterday, so we've seen more of it this morning, that people in Downing Street are engaging in discussions. They deny, Gavin Barwell denies, preparing for a second referendum. My God, Theresa May will no doubt be shouting it in this morning if she thought there was any chance of that being true. But the truth is this, we are stuck. And people are looking to try and move the Prime Minister, who in many ways is the most stubborn, the least tactical of the people in this entire debate, with her cabinet, her party, going, how can we change Theresa's mind? And that's the game here. So, yes, I think that there is going to be time wasting involved on this. But you have ultimately got to get agreement between the Commons and number 10.
Yeah. It sounds like a Christmas movie, doesn't it? How do you solve a problem like Theresa?
But that means, you know, to do this responsibly means we should be having the meaningful vote next week. At the moment, the meaningful vote is scheduled for mid-January. We're due to leave the EU on the 29th of March. We are wasting precious time not having a vote on a on a position that we know it's not going to get through.
What can you do about it? Theresa May has determined that these so-called, possibly fake negotiations are going to stretch onto the other side of Christmas. How do you stop her?
Practically, I think that if Downing Street has got itself to a place where it needs votes in Parliament to know that there is deadlock after all that has happened over the last few weeks, then they are kind of not really clued up with what is going on in Parliament. I think we've all got to come clean. We know Parliament is deadlocked. We know that there will be amendments tabled for all the different options. Mm. The first thing we need to do is we need to get a resolution fast on the government's position. Without that, nothing else happens.
This is all about Theresa May. Do you ever regret backing Theresa May in the leadership?
No, I don't at all. I backed her because I think she was certainly the best candidate at the time, and she is still, you know, the best candidate, I think, as far as being Prime Minister today is concerned. Brexit is difficult, and it's difficult for the Conservative Party, but I suspect that it would be difficult for the Labour Party as well if they were in government. I don't think any party or any Prime Minister would have found this easy to resolve.
Sienna?
You want to see a fresh referendum. What's on the ballot paper?
I don't want to see a fresh referendum. I think it's important to be clear on this. There's a big difference in wanting something and seeing an option as the only way to break deadlock. Mm-hmm. Now, if there is no majority in Parliament for anything, then what is the way forward, right? And you don't want to crash out of the EU because you, like me, understand that that will be catastrophic for the country. Asking the people the same question again, they are at liberty to send an answer back loud and clear that they have the same answer. There is nothing inherently undemocratic about asking a question again if Parliament can't resolve it, and if Parliament can't resolve it because we've got a hung Parliament. The people voted for a hung Parliament.
So you're down to seeing another referendum as the last, final, only way?
I see it as a democratic way of resolving this impasse.
It may be a way. Is it the only way now in your mind?
It looks like it, yeah.
With Remain among the choices?
I think so.
Is it Remain, her deal and no deal, or just Remain or her deal?
Well, I mean, I would want those who want to leave to define what the leave option is. It's not for me to define what the leave option is, but I would put Remain and the Prime Minister's deal on the ballot.
And you'd vote for that? You'd vote Remain?
Well, compared to the Prime Minister's deal, Remain is a lot better.
But that's what you would vote for?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about leadership, Sam? I mean, you see all the muttering and manoeuvring around Westminster. We all see it. It's pretty obvious. Now, has anyone offered you a job, by the way? How do you fancy being Foreign Secretary? You tell us.
Yeah, I'm getting worried. No one's tapped me for anything. But I think the bigger point here is you've now clearly got people telegraphing their ambitions, and their policy positions are being seen through that lens. Mm. I don't think the public want to see politicians jockeying for the next job.
This is
a serious time for the country.
It's out of the bottle, isn't it, Sam? There's no stopping it now. I mean, Downing Street is powerless to prevent this now.
well, it's beholden on all of us to behave responsibly and put the national interest first.
Yep. Sam?
Absolutely. I mean, she is going to try and wind down the clock as far as is possible. She just looks now like she's clinging to office for fear of seeing her defeat, seeing her plan defeated. But isn't the great problem here at this moment that the moment her plan goes down to a catastrophic defeat, all things could go in the air and we could end up with that vote of confidence? You just don't know that we won't end up in a vote of confidence that sees the potential for a new prime minister, a new government or possibly an election happen if her plan is voted down to a catastrophic defeat.
So what's the question?
The question is, be careful what you wish for, because you want her to put her plan to see it defeated and then to move on. Couldn't we then have an alternative outcome that sees meaningful votes, possibly this vote, possibly Theresa's government facing turmoil and possibly being thrown out of office?
Well, the government either says it's not going to put its position to a vote or we move on to other alternatives, or the government has got to have a vote. Okay. We can't be in limbo.
OK, we've got to move on there. We've run out of time. But you know what? We are going to move on. We're going to be back next week after another week of, well, who knows what, except a great deal more of what we've been seeing already. So that's Peanuts Politics then for another week. Sienna and Sam are still here with us. Damien Hines, Sam. That was interesting.
Well, I think that Damien Hines has just, on the programme, come out as the first cabinet minister to publicly call for Theresa May to go to Parliament and to try and start exploring, to flush out, to use his language, various options. What is possible? What isn't possible? Now, look, Parliament will be voting on stuff that doesn't quite understand. Who knows what Norway is, for instance? I get confused depending on what day of the week it is. But the idea is that we've got to bake the bread a lot. You heard Sam Ghima telling the Prime Minister to just get on with it. I think there's a sense that Theresa May's negotiation, whether you're a backbencher or a cabinet minister, is probably dead. And even the concessions she is asking for aren't enough. But to allow it to linger on like an almost like a bad smell over the Christmas season to the other side is incredibly worrying, because time is running out, the clock is ticking down. Take it to Parliament, whether you're Sam Ghima to destroy her deal or whether you're Damien Hines to find out what the alternatives are. There needs to be movement. But the problem is the one woman in number 10 who is stubborn, who is determined. And you just felt that anger that she's expressing in the news bulletins at Tony Blair is probably also how she feels to some of those cabinet ministers that are starting to work out whether or not a second referendum isn't the best option for them. That would probably destroy the last big element of her legacy if she isn't the prime minister who delivers Brexit. So you can see this morning why she's cross.
Yeah, to borrow a line from another one of those Christmas movie stalwarts, The Godfather, for her, it's not just business, it's personal too.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, she is looking there at her legacy. And if there's a second referendum, it's not pretty.
All right. Sienna, what's the takeaway for you?
That was really interesting. I mean, Ashworth was really struggling with the state aid questions, which I thought was interesting. But also, I would think that John Ashworth is probably one of those, the 68% of voters I was talking about who don't actually believe that Corbyn can renegotiate a better deal. I think he's one of those. And he didn't properly answer that question. So, that's another thing that I thought was interesting. But also, the question of what should Labour's manifesto promise actually be if they did secure a general election? You know, all those things are still completely up in the air. Mm. And Sam was talking about Theresa May being stubborn and actually quite angry with maybe even some of her colleagues. I think Jeremy Corbyn is just as stubborn, and he's really holding back the tide on calling for another referendum. He's under so much pressure from, you know, even shadow cabinet members as well as the grassroots. I mean, the whole point of Jeremy Corbyn is democratising the Labour Party, and we all know the membership want another referendum.
Sienna, Sam, thanks very much indeed for coming on. We will talk again, I have no doubt, before too long. See you next week.